Welcome to Let's Talk America. I have been looking at what has been going on in the course of the last several months, actually, because I think we're at a time that in our politics that's kind of unprecedented in the history of the country. I don't believe that at any stage along the way, there was a party that allowed and lifted up somebody to the presidency of the United States who was simply unfit to hold the office. And unfit not in the way that somewhere in their lifetime they didn't have the ability to acquit themselves in that office, but that the party had just waited too late. And the kind of talents and abilities, the focus, and the surety of thought that's needed in order to acquit oneself in the presidency, you know, that's a very onerous job that actually has people dealing with things coming from all different angles of the government's work. And they have to be able to concentrate on those things, understand them down to the ground, learn about them where they have to, and then provide the leadership that provokes the best response and make sure that that response is acquitted in the interests of the American people, not their own. And I think the Democrat Party has been disgracefully derelict in terms of putting Joseph Biden before the American people and keeping him in office. Because in point of fact, he does not seem to be up to the job. In addition to which, he's now carrying the baggage that I presume they're gonna have to start looking into, because you think about this issue, and the reason that it's on my mind is kind of obvious, I think, because the Republicans have finally, with McCarthy, moved forward and shown that they are at least going to give the serious inquiry that's needed in order to make a judgment about whether a formal impeachment of Joseph Biden is in order. And that impeachment, as some people talk as if you have to see in order for impeachment to move forward, you have to see some breach. But it's high crimes and misdemeanors. What is a misdemeanor? See, we think of a misdemeanor as a smaller crime, but a misdemeanor can actually just be a discontinuity between what you're doing and what is supposed to be done. So that as a result of what you're not doing, you are actually hurting the best interests of the American people. It makes sense that in that situation, you'd have to make an inquiry into the fitness for office of the individual that you're dealing with. And I think that that's what then raises the question, because the Congress is not supposed to sit on its hand and let the country go down the toilet in order to make up for a president who's not up to the job. And not up to the job, not because I say so or anything like that, but because for reasons that are now increasingly obvious every day, we're dealing with somebody who just is not fit to do the job because they have in this case, they're too old. And age doesn't always manifest itself in people in the same way. I mean, Biden isn't that much older. He's a bit older, but not that much older than Donald Trump. But at the same time, consider the differences between these two people. Trump being still a vigorous individual who seems at every point when he's addressing the people and doing interviews and so forth, he seems to know what's going on. And I think we have to sincerely entertain the possibility that he does not and ask ourselves, who is responsible for that? I think parties always, don't they, want to take responsibility for the great presidents they have and the fact that this person has been offered up by their party and you can have confidence in this person and so forth. Who is going to be able to accept that drivel from a Democrat Party that has proven its own incompetence because apparently it had no idea that it was foisting off on the country an individual who couldn't do the job? And not being able to do the job of the presidency, just so that we remember it, it's not just a matter of whether or not from day to day we're dealing with an individual who is not going to make mistakes in this or that way. No, it's not. Because what has to be considered, what has to be pondered so that leadership can be provided, so that the impetus that's going to get things moving in what is sometimes a recalcitrant bureaucracy is going to exist so that if dangers are arising, the country is not endangered. The economy is not endangered. The things that we are trying to accomplish as a nation is not in, are not in danger. Do you have confidence that that's true with Joe Biden? Because I don't. And I think that the Democrat Party should very well have known and should be taking the bit in its teeth right now. And instead of, as they seem to be prepared to do, ignoring all of these things that are suggesting that we're dealing with an individual who's not capable of acquitting himself in the office, they need to start taking it seriously on behalf of the American people. And I was interested in whether the Republicans would take on the business of an inquiry into this matter. Why? Well, because you could have sat back and just waited. Things get worse and worse until it finally becomes a foregone conclusion for most awful Americans that we definitely need to change. The Democrats are not interested. They're propping up rather than seeking change. And in that sense, who is going to look into it so that America does not end up being in some way permanently damaged, get us involved or keep us from being involved in critical areas where one way or the other, we need to make sure we have our wits about us. I think this is a dangerous time for the American people. And because of the role we play in the world, it's more dangerous than it would have been in the past. Because a lot of people are talking as if the palm of global leadership has passed to somebody else in this world. Chinese would love to have that happen. But how many of you, and I don't care whether you're the people I'm who are listening right now are Democrats or Republicans, do you really think that we ought to be comfortable with the notion that the leadership position that we have had in the world is going to pass into the hands of the Communist Party of China? Do you trust that a country that is showing itself to be a continually still belligerent in its posture, so that it's aiming at a goal that seeks to dominate? I think that if you examine the 20th century with any care, you can't really make the argument that until it is thrust upon us as the result of events during the course of the 20th century, Americans spend all their time thinking about how we become the leader of the world, how we dominate in this way and that. I think that, unfortunately, that's part of the mentality of the communist ideologues. It's one of the reasons why I don't support the idea that we should be electing people who follow these ideologies. And I don't care what they call it, socialism, this and that. You can examine their position, see what they're doing, and see whether they are in fact walking in step with an ideology that actually believes that the most important thing is to consolidate power in the hands of their party so that others are no longer going to be involved in deciding the fate of the country. The Constitution of the United States is written in such a way that that's not supposed to happen. This is supposed to be, as Lincoln called it, and I continually say this in the course of my talks here with people, it always comes up, because we are supposed to be a government of, by, and for the people. Not just for the people, by the way. That's what our politicians now want us to believe. You should just be sitting around asking, what has that government doing for me now? What has it done for me lately? And so forth and so on. That's not true. Because if you sit around thinking, what is my government doing for me? You have forgotten that you are the government. That as a whole, the people of the United States must take responsibility for what happens on account of the leaders we choose to put in office. And if you say, well, we didn't choose to put them in office, I'm sort of wondering, if you didn't choose to put them in office, whose fault was that? Whose butts were staying at home? Who wasn't paying careful enough attention to the real implications of the people you're choosing between? Because I think if Americans woke up and started thoughtfully approaching their responsibilities for the fate of the country every time they go to the polls, the first thing they would do is kick the Democrat Party to the curb. They would say, nope. Can't trust people who are committed to an ideology rather than being simply committed to this government of, by, and for the people, sustaining it in a way that allows the people of the United States to put their best foot forward so that the nation that we comprise is then secure on account of our ability discerningly to place people in office who will make that their goal. You really think we're being offered opportunities to do that? Because I think people become kind of so enamored of power that the only thing they care about and the only thing the parties really seem to prepare themselves to do is get and hold on to that power for as long as necessary. Every now and again, of course, somebody comes along who breaks the mold. And I would have to say that Donald Trump appears to be one such person. Like him, dislike him, he seems to be doing things and proposing things, moving forward with things that are actually based on serving the nation as a whole in such a way as to strengthen and preserve the government that it establishes in the hands of the people. And I think that's part of why people respond to him the way they do, why his crowds are so big, and why the one goal that the Democrat Party now has is to try to see to it. They want two things, that either Donald Trump is so embroiled in these trials for what, you and I would ask, well, if you read about, for nothing. I don't believe that these indictments involve any crimes whatsoever. What is being asserted as a crime, if it is a crime, would then exclude all of us from our participation as citizens of the United States in the business of government. Why? Because they're pointing the finger and said, well, Donald Trump was actually talking to people about the outcome of the election. He questioned the outcome of the election. I don't see anything in the Constitution that says the people of this country can't question the outcome of elections at any level. If they believe that something's rotten in Denmark, as the phrase used to go, that something's stinking to high heaven, that something isn't in correspondence with what's supposed to be the fair and equal proposition that we are going to the polls to vote for people on an honest basis, that those votes will be counted honestly, that situations won't be contrived in order to hand victory to this party or that. If that is being done, then we ought to be really concerned about it, wherever it occurs. Because if it's being done and nothing is being done about it, then this is a government of, by, whoever manages to put themselves in that position, where by overturning an election, they can hold on to power or achieve power. And we're sitting back and thinking that that's not our business, and that if somebody else is trying to make an effort, either to ascertain consistently whether the election was in fact an honest one, right? A one that actually reflected the votes that were cast or not, that's now going to be a crime. And that's what they're trying to say about Donald Trump. He got together, he talked to people about the fact that the election wasn't actually reflective of the will of the people. He was trying to get advice about what we should do about that and about how we could postpone any decision that was going to be made on the basis of fraudulent results. You don't think that's a good idea? So you want us to be in a situation where it's a crime to examine and they're going to try to turn you into a criminal. Oh, he was sitting around talking about whether or not this election should be overturned. No, he wasn't. He was actually taking an interest in whether the election was an honest reflection of the will of the people and whether there was enough in the way of concern and evidence and whether people were going to pursue those concerns and track down and examine that evidence. And if we fall into this category where we suddenly say, well, no, you can't, once the election is over, you just have to accept what happened. You can't raise a question about that. That's criminal. That's what got Donald Trump into trouble. You really want us to be in that position? Because I'll tell you straight, I think once the American people put themselves in a position where they have to accept the results of elections without question, otherwise be guilty of a crime, hauled into court for interfering with what? Exactly. Election's over. You didn't interfere with the election. You're now looking at the election and saying all kinds of anomalies occurred during this election and we need to think it through whether or not those resulted in breaking the election, essentially. And we don't think it's important to think about that. We think that we should accept a situation where however the election, whatever shenanigans may have gone on, don't look at that. Don't examine that. Don't demand that something be done to ascertain what really happened. No, don't do that. Yes, we just have to accept whatever is put forward by whoever manages to put that one over on us, because that's what they're doing. Okay? If freedom of speech means anything, it ought to mean the right of the people to question the outcome of the actions of those responsible for government, including responsibility for that aspect of government which critically sustains the rulership of the American people as a whole over the outcome, and so that we determine who's going to sit in the various seats of power in this country. If we're giving that up because we're too stupid to realize that without careful scrutiny of election results, if we just say, well, this is, it's a crime to even raise that issue, and we proved it because we took Donald Trump's butt into the courtroom and we had him penalized because he was raising questions about election and dared to gather people to see whether or not a shenanigans had occurred. This is insane, to tell you the truth. I think people who are accepting this implication from what is being done, both by these prosecutors, but also, of course, by the Democrat Party who is sustaining them, you're setting yourself up for the destruction of the rule by the American people of the government that's supposed to be established in their name and ultimately under their supervision. You ask yourself, who's supposed to be in charge of government in the United States? The people chosen by the people of the United States in fair and free elections, not tainted by cheating and other things, including, by the way, the sorts of shenanigans that these days do require that you be pretty vigilant and that you also have people on your side who can understand how people can manipulate voting machines, who understand what that's all about, who understand what might have been. What did they just take advantage of the coincidence of all the things that were going on in the course of the pandemic? Because a lot of people who would have gone to the polls in person ended up voting through these mail-in ballots and boxes and so forth and so on, which were then subject by many reports to abuse. And that abuse, was it exclusive to the Democrat Party? I don't know. But I certainly sat through a number of these gatherings that were held, not in the company of Donald Trump or anybody like that, where people were just gathering together and letting people who were knowledgeable about how something like this could be done with the machines, with what was going on with the ballot boxes, whether there was the danger and whether there had been indications of something that would suborn the integrity of our electoral process. That's serious business if you're still interested in being a self-governing people. And I hope we are. Have we gone tired of this? Are we ready to hand off the power into the hands of what would be then an elitist few? And if you make it the Democrat Party, an elitist few that already, a lot of them, subscribe to an ideology that rejects the premise of American self-government. Because American self-government is not a government of, by, and for some vanguard party or other. It's a government of, by, and for the people that's supposed to be decided in the essential point of who governs in any particular level and circumstance. That's an issue that's supposed to be decided by the electorate, by the people of the United States acting in their citizen role and responsibility, so that the people who are sitting in all the seats of power, including in the deep state and everywhere else, realize that they serve and must reflect the will of the American people. Now, if you allow for fraudulent elections and you tell everybody, no, that's off limits, you even raise a question about the election, you're doing something wrong, that's not true. And on the day that it becomes acceptable to make that argument, it means we have been done out of our rulership, which can only be sustained if the elections are honest and if we use them wisely. And that's the question mark, isn't it? Because I think that a people that's given evidence that they don't care really whether the elections were fraudulent or not. And to accept the arguments that the Democrats are making about January 6th and everything else. I would be wondering, by the way, why it is that Nancy Pelosi turned down President Trump's offer of troops to sustain the peace, and so that there would be no reason to fear that there would be any possibility of being overturned or overrun or anything else, which he did, by the way. He offered that. And why didn't they have a substitute if they didn't want to do that? Because she was in charge. A lot of things that are fishy about the response of the Democrat leadership to a situation that showed that there were a lot of people questioning what was going on in these various critical states with respect to the handling of the election. And now they suddenly want us to believe and to follow them as they go down a path which they hope will establish the precedent that you shouldn't question the outcome of elections. That's a crime. And anybody who does so is doing some conspiratorial thing aimed at overthrowing the government of the United States. That's a lie. The only way you truly overthrow the government of the United States is to overthrow the responsible result of elections by the people. If you successfully do that, then the facade of having elections is worth no more in the United States than it was in the old Soviet Union, when they were under that strict communist control, everybody understood elections in the old Soviet Union were honest elections decided by the will of the people. They were selective elections decided by the masters of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. And so they were in control. You really want to have a government in which some party is controlling the outcome of elections, therefore eviscerating the notion that we have a government of, by, and for the people, when what we will have is a government of, by, and for a powerful elite few, selectively chosen amongst themselves so that they can keep the nation enthralled and do their will. Do we want this to happen? Because it seems to me that acquiescence in fraudulent elections or the appearance of fraudulent elections or not seconding the motion when people say we need to take a careful look at what actually happened during these elections, and they're willing to listen to testimony and collect evidence and so forth and so on to make sure that the choice was right. And I would say that if it takes that, then we ought to lengthen, maybe back to its original length, the distance between the time the election occurs and the time one actually assumes office. So we give the situation several months in order to mature.
1 minute.
If real questions arise. That was the case at one point in the history of the American presidency in particular. And I wouldn't be averse to going back to it, because what is really the most seriously concerning thing here has nothing to do with Donald Trump, has nothing to do with people getting together to share their misgivings about what happened in an election. That's called freedom of speech. It's guaranteed by the Constitution. It is so far from being a crime that to interfere with it is, in fact, the criminal endeavor, overthrowing our Constitution by a means that then effectively reduces us to pawns that are incapable of trying to do something about what we would by then know, as the people, a lot of them in the Soviet Union knew, that they had no role in selecting their masters. Do we really want that for this country? Ponder it. I'll be right back.
SAT123.com. They have put together a really incredible package: emergency backup communication systems, power systems. We've got sat phones, we've got solar panels, and also the big 400 watt solar panel behind us there. And why does this matter? Because of course, right now we are dealing with massive risk of blackouts, and the power grid is just failing, you know, intermittently, but it's going to get worse because we've also got energy shortages. Think about the lack of coal power, the diesel problems that are happening right now. If you're in the military or the National Guard or Border Patrol, or law enforcement, and you need to be able to function even when the power grid goes down, Or maybe you're a first responder, rescue team, firefighter, paramedic, you name it. You need to know about this equipment. So SAT123.com, folks.
Hello, I'm Anna Kane with The Flame.
And I'm Nicole Orozco with The Flame.
And we just want to thank Brighteon for having us on their show. And we want to encourage everybody to break out of the movable middle. Go to theflameusa.com. Get your subscription to...
If you don't want to eat GMOs and pesticides in your storable food, choose organic, lab-tested storable food solutions from the Health Ranger store. We are the only emergency food manufacturer in the world that subjects each of our ingredients to rigorous laboratory testing that covers herbicides, heavy metals, aflatoxins, identity testing, and bacteria tests, including E. coli, salmonella, yeast, and mold. At healthrangerstore.com, you'll find certified organic, lab-tested, freeze-dried fruits, microalgae superfoods, protein powders, and supplements. We offer emergency first aid colloidal silver products made with Texas rainwater, and our Ranger buckets feature an impressive assortment of organic storable food items professionally vacuum sealed in heavy-duty bags that are stacked in rugged buckets for long-term storage. Check out our preparedness foods, supplements, personal care, and emergency first aid products at healthrangerstore.com.
Freedom of speech is a basic human right that has been hard-won and granted to all law-abiding Americans. As such, we should not take our freedom of speech and expression for granted. This is more important now than ever before, since world governments and the mainstream media often try to suppress those whose opinions differ from the so-called official narrative. Here at BrighteonStore.com, we are dedicated to fighting for every American's right to speak their mind without the fear of censorship or suppression. That's why every purchase you make at BrighteonStore.com supports our pro-liberty video sharing platform, Brighteon.com, so we can keep bringing you all the latest unrestricted videos mainstream media doesn't want you to see. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
Welcome back. I'm Alan Keyes. This is Let's Talk America on the Brighteon TV network. Shout out to the folks at Brighteon for the wonderful work that they have done establishing a platform that's, I think, respectful of those who are approaching the challenges in this country, among other things, in reverence and fear of God. And combining that with an understanding and concern for the constitutional proceedings that are supposed to prevail in our political order in the United States to make sure that it is a government of, by, and for the people, and that we, the people, remain in charge of the process rather than handing it off to a vanguard party of any kind where people have the delusion that they are the answer that's necessary and everybody else should simply hear and obey. And sadly, that's the impression I have of the folks who push the left-wing agenda in this country. They try to pretend that somehow or another, it's those right-wingers, they're trying to do something to all of us and they're going to be this and that. And yet, what do people who are in their mind right-wingers, what are they usually in the business of doing? Trying to make sure that people get to make up their own minds, set up their own businesses, earn their money, keep as much of it as possible, and so forth and so on. And what's wrong with that? When I look at what is often the goal of people who are of a conservative mindset, these are people who want to take responsibility for themselves, who want to be out there doing something that every day contributes to their benefit and the preservation of themselves and their families, but also, therefore, the preservation of their communities, and to equip themselves in such a way that they might arrive at a position where, in addition to what they do then, in order to preserve themselves, they have the wherewithal to participate as citizens in the political process in a way that can make the difference. Do you realize, and I hope a lot of people think about this, that most of the people who run for office in one way or another depend on the largesse of others. And these days, we're more and more being focused on it as if it were just the largesse of the wealthiest people and so forth, but that's not true. Because campaigns don't work in America very well if you don't get support from grassroots people, and that includes support in raising money. Well, that's exactly why, by the way, though you would think. Now, there's Donald Trump, right? Doesn't he have enough money to run his own campaigns? Why do you get dunning letters from his campaign asking for support for the efforts that he's making? Is it because he doesn't have enough money to make them for himself? No. It's because that is actually part of the responsibility of our citizenship, without which it ceases to be an authentic government of, by, and for the people, and becomes a government of, by, and for people in love with power rather than in love with justice and right, including all of the unalienable rights that we claim as a result of the nature of the founding of this entity in America that is then responsible for our self-government. See, I have spent a lot of time dwelling on that because I think it's the key. And if people ask me these days, and unfortunately we're in a situation where people often ask, what do you think? What's going wrong with this country? It looks like we're in serious trouble. And I actually think that we are in serious trouble. But it's trouble that is less onerous than it appears if you remember that it can be fairly quickly reversed if the American people wake up as such to their own responsibilities and do not allow themselves to be put in a position where they submit to a little clique of people proposing that they're going to be the party in charge, be for ideological reasons. When the American people need to have it as their goal to remain in charge of the destiny of this country, because it's the only way they can be reasonably certain that it's going to be decided not by somebody else's power-mad ideology, but by the common sense of the American people, including those who are willing to do a job of work for themselves and their families so that family and community and nation can be sustained in their existence by the people themselves. And that's what we're supposed to be about, isn't it? So I am glad that this whole business with the questions that have arisen, and by the way, having sat through briefings about these things in various ways, I think that there are serious questions about the election in 2020. And I think that we need to have those questions examined. And that the effort to make sure that that is done is an effort in which our representatives should be engaged if they're still ours, if they haven't succumbed to the notion that their goal now is to consolidate the control of power in the hands of some party or parties that then control the outcomes irrespective of the views of the people, because they now control an election process that is essentially going to go unexamined by the people of the United States. And one thing that could contribute to that, in my opinion, is if the Republicans stick to their guns and actually carry out a clean examination of what is going on with the Biden administration, with the key question being, are the Democrats willing to take responsibility in any way for a president of the United States who does not seem fit for the job and whose fitness is not only questioned on grounds of what he does and has been doing in office, but also has to be questioned on grounds of character and what he did before he got into office, at least if a lot of the things that are out there that you can read yourself, including Peter Schweitzer's book and so forth, where things are suggested, and some of them verified, I think, by some things that Biden himself has said. The notion, for example, that he involved himself in the business of a company from which his son was earning hundreds of thousands of dollars by serving on the board, though nobody can tell us exactly what he brought to that service other than an ability to mobilize the influence of his father, then Vice President Biden, in the government of the United States and in its affairs. That being a business Burisma in the Ukraine, where Hunter Biden had a role that in terms of what he brought to the table in of that enterprise, in, given it, its own functions, who knows? He wasn't an expert in what they did. He was an expert in getting things done that they wanted done in the context of the receipt of nice paycheck by Hunter Biden, and that those things did seem to involve, because Biden himself took credit for it. He took credit for hounding a prosecutor who wanted and was pursuing an investigation into that Burisma company to see whether they were in fact engaged in nefarious business dealings. And Biden actually intervened to have that prosecutor removed. So you notice that they're up in arms if anybody says a bad word about all these people who are trying to act as if Donald Trump committed a crime that somehow was connected with January 6th in an effort to overthrow the government of the United States, which did not happen, by the way, at all. Nothing in evidence in terms of January suggests any such business going on, except perhaps on the part of people, including Nancy Pelosi and others, who acted in a lackadaisical fashion in the context of something that could have been, I think, quite easily handled if they had simply paid attention. It's almost as if they wanted to leave the door open so they could blame somebody else for the break-in. And that's what they are now trying to do. It's shrewd, but we shouldn't be so stupid that we let them get away with it. And I'll say it again. That's why I was pleased to see that they are, as one headline called it, pursuing the logical next step. And McCarthy announced that just today, saying that they're going to proceed with an impeachment inquiry. And then the question becomes, what are they going to be inquiring into? See, because I think that that involves not just the conduct of President Biden, but also the previous indications of a pattern of behavior that then raises questions about whether or not bribery and other high crimes and misdemeanors, because bribery, accepting a bribe, is one of those, occurred at any stage, especially in the course of his assuming high office, because the Burisma business, for instance, occurred when he was vice president, and it raises serious questions. So I'm wondering what the scope of this inquiry is going to be and how they're going to handle it, and whether or not, because of course, the inquiry will be an inquiry in the House where the Republicans have control, because otherwise, but because the Democrats control the Senate, right, there is not going to really be an impeachment trial, I don't think, because they wouldn't stand for it. And in any case, there would be several Republican senators who might be disposed to essentially say no, and they would vote against taking any action to impeach and remove the president on this basis. The two processes are different, however, thankfully. And what we'd be looking at is the process that would go on in the House of Representatives, where the Republicans, I think, have every warrant and necessity to carefully scrutinize the behavior which has contributed to the impression that the behavior of Joseph Biden, of Hunter Biden and others in respect of their involvement with foreign monies and raising monies in inappropriate way. Well, is that true? Is that a fact? Are those facts? Do they have to be considered? Are we dealing with something where malfeasance has occurred that then disqualifies one, I would think, for the highest offices in the land? Did during the course of his vice presidency, if things that are out there and that you can scrutinize are true, and maybe doing so still in the course of his presidency? It's something that I think every American ought to have a serious interest in. And frankly, I think the Democrats ought to have a more serious interest in the truth than Republicans. Why? Because if America's awake, I think the fate of the Democrat Party, though they're looking good at the moment, I mean, they have the presidency and so forth and so on, and they think that things are, you know, really working well for them, I suppose. I don't know. But the impression that they, on their watch, a president was placed into office that then became part him or herself. You know, because in the past, did some elements of the U.S. government and people who were in high offices, did they ever get involved in things like this Teapot Dome scandal comes to mind and things of that sort. So it has happened in the course of America's history. But for it to happen at the level of the presidency, for it to happen in a context where the very person that we're looking at is going to be bidding to extend control for another 4 years, I think if the American people don't wake up, the United States of America may not wake up, except into a world where the government of, by, and for the people that's supposed to exist here no longer does. Are we ready to accept that, I wonder, as the people of the United States? Because I sincerely hope not. But I wonder if some Americans out there haven't grown weary of well-doing. If they're not willing to experiment with the notion that maybe we should just turn all of this over to the people who know something. Because after all, do most ordinary Americans really feel like they know what's required in order to deal with a lot of these complex issues? I kind of doubt it. But I don't think that under our system of government, an extensive knowledge of all those particulars is what we're supposed to bring to the table. What we're supposed to bring to the table at election time is common sense. A common sense, first, obviously, that's going to extend to our own circumstances, answering a question that the media is always interested in, what have you done for me lately? But tell me something. Would we seriously be a government of, by, and for the people if the only question that we were asking ourselves is what's being done for us lately? What do you do for me? How much money do I get from the government? And so forth and so on. And is it going to be sustained? And all questions. What about my health care? And what about this and that? Is that the mentality we're supposed to have? Because if it is, then the government's going to fail. And consulting the people and making sure that you are taking care of business in terms of the immediate environs of your life, that's part of your responsibility. But I think it's time that instead of just taking it for granted that we can be content with that narrow-minded view of our responsibilities as citizens, we need to start remembering that since the outcome as a whole depends on the judgment of the people, then the whole people ought to know that as they make that judgment, they must take responsibility for what they do for the nation, not just for themselves. This business of approaching it as if they're supposed to do a little calculus and see, well, how much the Democrats doing for me and how much the Republicans doing for me? And if they're doing something for me, then that's enough. No, it's not. The key question is, what are they doing for or to the United States, for or to the nation, for or to the prospects that that nation is going to survive and prosper so that our children and our grandchildren get the same opportunities that people for decades and decades, going all the way back to the founding of the country, have gotten to address both the successes and the failures of the United States and do it in a way that sustains a form of government that has never been sustained, really, on the basis that we have in this country, never been sustained before in the history of mankind. Where real, what would be called ordinary folks, just ordinary folks, ordinary people, not kings and queens and potentates and conquerors and so forth and so on, but just ordinary folks, have sustained a government where at every level they control who is going to represent them in that government, and that representation has been effective, not just at dealing with the usual circumstances of every day, including the national security of the country, but very often with extraordinary circumstances, included in the run-up to the Civil War, just as an example, the circumstance of having to make up the nation's mind about what was, I think, a glaring contradiction from the very beginning in the premises of the nation's life. Self-government, depending on the notion expressed in the Declaration of Independence that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, rights that turn out not to be, as some people try to convince us, freedoms. The rights we have do involve going out there and freely committing ourselves to do things. But what are those things that correspond to the name of right? They are, in fact, obligations and responsibilities, including the obligation and responsibility I've been talking about in this program, the obligation and responsibility to use our role as people who elect representatives in order to secure not just for ourselves, but for our country, the best outcome possible, compatible with sustaining that form of government, unique to in all the world, when it was first founded, to the United States. And I would say that we still, because of the nature of our founding, we still represent an instance of the government of, by, and for the people that Lincoln talked about that's unique in the history of mankind. We have actually, I think, kept the promise that was implied in the Declaration's willingness, and it was a little bit of hubris, I think, on the part of the founders of this country, that they actually fancied themselves to be in a situation where they could decide whether governments were always going to depend on force and fear, or whether they could, in fact, depend on the honest participation of the people themselves in the business of caring for the existence, preservation, and prosperity of their country. I think we've done rather well. And even though it was through great difficulties, we've done so well that it is still the case that the example of what has been accomplished in America is drawing people and has drawn people from all over the world, where we are still to face the question of how we all get to work together in the name of our common humanity, because that's the name that in which the country was founded, in the name of God endowed unalienable rights to every human being. Right? All are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. But it turns out that those rights aren't just the right to do what you please and to do what you choose. They are the responsibility to do right according to the premises of the authority that in the first place made your enjoyment of those rights and your responsibility for the doing of right possible, and also define the terms on which the walk you walk is going to be a righteous one, one that is compatible with standards of right that turn out to be good for all humanity. Otherwise, power becomes sort of like the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And I wonder how many times people sit back, even people who are well-versed in the Bible, it's good to sit back occasionally realize there was the tree of life. And for Adam and Eve, life was good, right? So in essence, that is the tree of the knowledge of good. And it's exemplified in the scriptural account, because though we pray to God these days and so forth and so on, I certainly hope there are times when by the grace and will of God and his Son, that for the sake of which Christ gave his life is open to us so that we can be in communion with God as we try to make the hard decisions and try to take the right decisions that will result in good rather than evil. Because right? I think the tree of life was the tree of good. And the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, right, was the tree in which we had to choose. And we could corrupt ourselves in the understanding that that choice determined what is good, even when it departed from the standards of God, or we could seek to do right according to those standards provided by God. And we're still in that situation now as a people. And I say it over and over again because I think we're forgetting it wholesale as a people. We're actually giving in to the temptation now presented, I think, in all kinds of ways to consider that only our passions and pleasures determine what's right. And we are seeking out people who will help us to do right according to our whims instead of doing right according to a standard determined by the almighty power that created us in the first place for good and not for evil. So that life was good until Adam and Eve decided that, well, maybe I should taste of that evil for a moment and see whether it is good and evil. And you can hold both in your hand at the same time. Turns out, I think, that we can't. But we are doing an experiment, or at least some people are trying to do it on us here in America today, where we forget that fact. We have a choice. We can try to turn America into a place where we can eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil and not suffer the consequences. Or we can remember that all our strengths and all our triumphs and all our victories and all our greatness were the result of ordinary folks who didn't take it upon themselves to believe that as part of this vanguard party or other, they could take all the power and use it as they pleased. But instead, even in the face of things like the grave challenges of slavery and discrimination and other things deeply rooted in the history of mankind, even then, if you followed and walked the walk of God's provision of righteousness, you could create a nation in which people would want to come because they would be regarded with dignity. And you could have a good life, which is a life of good and not evil, working together, not just with your friends and family, but with all people of goodwill, whatever race, color, creed, or kind they come from. That's what this nation is about. And the question before us now, are we going to keep it? Ponder that. We'll be back.